Today we come back to the Fermi Paradox to contemplate the concept of advanced civilizations that don't go out and colonize the galaxy or go extinct, but manage to exist for truly long periods of time just on their home planet or perhaps their own solar system. Now, the Fermi Paradox itself is not our main focus, but more of a backdrop to this concept because it is a recurring one in discussion of alien civilizations. That said, if this is your first visit to this channel, or you just haven't seen those episodes, I do recommend watching the earlier Fermi Paradox episodes before this one, especially the Fermi Paradox Compendium. This is not a good introductory episode. As a refresher though, the Fermi Paradox is the apparent contradiction between how immense and old the universe is, and how apparently absent of intelligent life it is. There are a ton of solutions for why this is the case, and we covered all of those in the aforementioned compendium. Now, one of the common camps is that technological civilizations like our own do not arise very often, either because life doesn't emerge too often, or the evolutionary path to intelligent tool users just doesn't get followed much. We don't see alien civilizations because none have developed yet near enough for us to see them. The other side of that argument is that technological civilizations do emerge fairly often, but something prevents us from seeing them. That could be extinction, which we covered in the Apocalypse How video, or it could be because such civilizations do not expand much, are not that common, and tend to stay fairly quiet. We discussed a lot of other options, and they just don't work very well. Against that, we have the idea of a civilization that has the brains, but not the ability. Dolphins never develop technology because they can't light fires underwater. The hyper-intelligent snail people of Mollusk 5 might lack the hands or tentacles to use tools. But even if they had them, the gravity on their world is just too high and the atmosphere too thick for them to get into orbit using conventional rockets, so they never turn their eyes to the skies. They might exist for eons that way. And even if their technology eventually improves enough to allow them to economically get off their planet, they may have adopted an attitude of it being a bad idea to try. People would do that. Faced with a nigh impossible task, they will often come up with a laundry list of other downsides that become conventional wisdom, and remain so even after the landscape has changed to permit the idea. The notion of a long-lasting but non-expanding civilization is one we also ruled out as a decent explanation for the Fermi Paradox, but it was a bit different than some others. We did not say that there are not civilizations that stay at home, or that they were uncommon, but rather we ruled it out because it does appear possible to expand outward and colonize an entire galaxy. And it would only take a tiny fraction of civilizations to do just that to destroy it as a Fermi Paradox solution. But again, we did not say such civilizations were uncommon, let alone impossible. There are a lot of reasons to get out and colonize the galaxy, and as we'll see, some make more sense than others. If you are a regular on this channel, you know I am a strong advocate of doing just that. And basically, to me, looking up at the night sky is like looking at a bunch of beautiful bonfires, made of burning libraries. Every star in this galaxy, which does not currently have an inhabited planet around it, is just wasting its energy, energy that could be used to support life, and which I believe can, should, and will be turned to that end by us in the next few million years. That is not a common way of looking at space exploration. I suspect a lot of the regular audience here who have absorbed some of the ideas we kick around might share that view now, but it is not a common one. I don't think it is a controversial one, just a byproduct of thinking some of these ideas through to their logical conclusion. Let's consider some of the more normal reasons for space exploration and consider how logical those are, and ask if you need to colonize a bunch of other solar systems to do them. Many have valid points, but many also do not, and of those that do, we are going to consider if there are alternatives. I will just list out the reasons to do it and the reasons not to, and then we will come back and chew through them. Here are the most common reasons I could find to go out into space. Number 1, so we don't have all our eggs in one basket here on Earth. Number 2, because we need the raw materials. Number 3, because we need the space. Number 4, to better understand our own world. Number 5, to inspire mankind and future generations. Number 6, to seek out new life and new civilizations. Mostly good reasons, or at least they sound good. Here is the list of reasons not to do it. Number 1, we still haven't finished exploring Earth yet. Number 2, we need to solve our problems here first. Number 3, it is a waste of money. Number 4, we could be blundering into threats we can't handle yet. Okay, let us go through and contemplate those. And since we are asking why people might stay at home on Earth, I will mostly play devil's advocate. Let us look at our first one. Get off of Earth. If something happens to it, humanity goes with it. Don't keep all your eggs in one basket. This would be a great reason except for two key problems. First off, civilizations are not eggs, except in the sense that if you place a colony somewhere, it is going to hatch into a thriving civilization all on its own. This is not a great way to preserve your civilization. When you throw technology into the mix, things like genetic engineering, and look at these things on astronomical timelines, there won't be much in common with the colony and the world that sent it. Second, you do not need other solar systems to protect your civilization from natural hazards, and it won't protect you from intelligent threats. A few dozen of the kind of rotating habitats we have discussed on this channel so many times give you all the backup you need, and there are room for trillions of them in the solar system. Millions just in close proximity to Earth. But you could stick some far off in the Oort cloud if you just want distance as protection. And those can be constructed to be supernova-proof. They can also be constructed to be decent interstellar starships. So having a few dozen scattered around your solar system gives you an excellent backup against natural disasters and accidents. To truly threaten a technological civilization, one that is advanced enough to be able to go to another solar system and terraform a planet in the first place, you need intelligence. And distance won't help you against that, because there is no stealth in space and you cannot hide. If I am the commander of some alien extermination fleet, I am going to know where your backup colonies are because I saw your ships go there. And I am not going to call it a day when I've obliterated your homeworld. I will go track down all your colonies because I know where they are, and I do not want them growing up to come get some vengeance in a few thousand years. You do need space technology to get yourself protection from certain types of threats, but you do not need much, and you do not need an interstellar civilization to have it. Some threats, like asteroids, just are not a threat to a technologically advanced species. You do not need a backup planet to protect you from that, and a random asteroid approaching your planet is more likely to be regarded as a lucky mining resource, not a threat. Which of course is another reason often cited to get into space. We need the resources, we want the metal. We talked about this in the asteroid mining episode. Except for precious metals like gold and platinum, which you do not really need, just want, we have more of everything down here on Earth than in our entire asteroid belt. Asteroid mining is great for getting metals to be used in space, not for bringing it home to Earth itself. If you are not planning to build up a huge space infrastructure, then all those moons and asteroids are mostly worthless. Lots of folks say we need the space for our population to grow, or expand into, but population growth cannot be fixed by interstellar colonization. It costs more energy to get a person to another solar system than it would to keep them alive for centuries anyway. Also, as we discussed in other episodes, you can stuff a lot more people into a solar system than you can into an entire galaxy if you are just using planets. One way or another, if you are living here on Earth, we are going to run out of room if we keep growing in numbers. After you fill up your solar system, after you fill up your galaxy, after you use all the tricks for miniaturizing stuff, or even people, you will still eventually have to either stop growing your numbers back here on Earth, or you've got a problem. We quadrupled the human population last century. If we keep up that sort of growth, in a bit over 10,000 years, we would have more people than there are atoms in the universe. We have talked about some ways to support truly huge numbers of people, both regular old people like ourselves, and purely digital folks living in digital existences. But I don't care how good you are at miniaturization, you are not going to support a person on less than one atom, even if they live on a computer chip. At those kind of growth rates, you would fill up the kind of planet-wide supercities we discussed in Yucca Monopolises in 500 years, a classic Dyson swarm in a bit over 1,000 years, and even a Matryoshka brain in about 4,000 years. If you are colonizing the galaxy, you still haven't gotten out to all but a tiny piece of it by then, even if you could go the speed of light, and 10% is probably about as fast as you can get with a colony ship. So you have to stop growth eventually, and even if you are growing more modestly, that just slows down the timeline. We must also consider life extension. Extending human lifetimes beyond a century will also increase your growth rate and alter many other dynamics. Some folks would say you might as well start now and just keep to the current population, or even bring it down lower. I do not agree, but that doesn't invalidate that perspective. Another popular one is that it will help us better understand our own planet, and I think that is quite true, but mostly from what we can learn from satellites around the planet, and some associated technologies. We could learn a lot about weather by having a few hundred Earth-like planets we could watch the weather on, but I suspect we will have that down pat long before we get people or even robots around planets in other solar systems to watch them up close. We would also say that learning about the universe and exploring it can inspire mankind and generations of scientists to come. That is true. Gagarin and Glenn and Armstrong and the others inspired countless people all around the planet. There are some other sources of inspiration, though, other fields which have greatly contributed to mankind and inspired us too, and you do get diminishing returns on that investment. I couldn't think of the name of a single member of the current crew up on the space station, and I would be surprised if most people could name anyone who had been up there in the last decade. Which is a pity, because there are a ton of amazing folks from a bunch of different countries who have been up there doing their nations and humanity proud, but it is what it is. We remember Amundsen and Scott as the first to lead teams to the South Pole, but who knows the name of any of the 100 or so people down at the Amundsen-Scott station on the South Pole. We remember Magellan's expedition for circumnavigating the globe, but that's mundane now, and the crew on the ISS actually do it 15 times a day. So it isn't a great investment for inspiration. We will remember the first person to step foot on Mars, or on some planet around Alpha Centauri, but not the 100th person to do so, or the 100th new planet someone sets foot on. Also, there are plenty of things to be inspired by back here on Earth, too. But it is inspirational, the idea to set foot on where no one has gone before, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before. I think this is a great reason to go into space. Unfortunately, it probably is not. Science fiction, especially Star Trek, tends to imply you can meander around the galaxy and just blunder across new civilizations and spatial anomalies every week. This is highly unlikely in a non-FTL universe. You would know long before you got to a solar system if anything is living there. Even non-intelligent life ought to be pretty obvious. You would not send people to these anyway, you would send robots. Sending people there, loaded up as we are with tons of strains of viruses and bacteria, is not a great approach to exploring an alien ecosystem. Robots are better, especially if your robots are smart enough to do all the cataloging on their own, so you don't need people up in orbit of that planet controlling them remotely. As to technological civilizations, you should be able to see them a long way off, even if they are hiding. You would need centuries or even longer to get to visit them face to face, and that's not the sort of thing you would do by surprise. If you did just happen to wander into a solar system that contains a civilization that's been hiding there, I suspect they won't appreciate guests very much anyway. Yes, it would be great to meet aliens and to talk with them and to explore the universe together, but I think that's better done by making forced contact at a distance,
and only with those who want it.
That's a topic we will be looking at in January, forced contact with alien civilizations. Okay, those are some of the more popular ideas for why we should go into space, and they are good ones, but as we see, a lot of them are a bit thin, Or at least they seem that way when contemplated as a reason to move your civilization out beyond your own planet and solar system. Now let us go the other way and look at some of the reasons suggested for why we shouldn't go out into space. I generally do not think much of these, and again, I'd imagine the majority of the audience of this channel does not either, but some are a bit more solid than they first appear to be when we examine them. First, we have the notion that we still haven't finished exploring our own planet. This is true. We have barely cracked the surface of neat and interesting things to study just here on Earth. It is the most interesting place in the universe, at least that we know of. But this is not a good one for a few reasons. First, by exploring off the planet, we do often learn about the planet, or get the tools for doing so. That was one of our common reasons given to explore space, after all. Second, we will eventually figure out our own planet, and I doubt it will take millions of years to do that, so it only delays things in that respect. Third, we can walk and chew bubblegum at the same time. I don't see why we can't explore Earth and space at the same time any more than we can research chemistry and biology at the same time. Heck, we do better by exploring both at once. Many would also say we need to solve our problems here first. I hear this a lot when we talk about colonizing Mars. We don't want to export our screwed up civilization to another planet. This tends to be followed by some soapboxing about whatever they dislike most about our civilization. I am never too clear why so many folks are so down on humanity. Personally, I think we're pretty awesome. I mean, not as awesome as a dinosaur, but pretty awesome. Still, I'd have to agree we certainly have our failings. I just don't think that will ever not be true, at least in our own eyes. If we are examining ourselves and not finding faults, we probably should not be leaving Earth, because we have probably devolved into a super narcissistic society. So if we use this as a reason not to go, it is unlikely to ever change. I do not find it compelling, though. Next, we have the idea that it is a waste of money. This is obviously subjective. NASA is very expensive. Its annual budget is larger than the entire gross domestic product of fully half the nations on this planet. That said, it represents a relatively minor budgetary expense against the United States' own GDP, being about a thousandth. The argument is still valid, especially when stretched to include non-scientific missions. We learn a lot of new science and develop a lot of new technology through space, but we also do by investing that same money in something like cancer research. You could argue more good would be done by investing NASA's budget into curing leukemia, but that's a superficial approach to how research works. Research gets done by finding smart people who are passionate about something and giving them the resources to look into it. Doubling or halving the money we spend on something isn't going to double or half the time it takes to make a breakthrough. And sciences are pretty interconnected. Breakthroughs in one often help in another. But that only applies to the research itself. It is hard to argue spending a few billion bucks to land people on the moon again is a responsible use of funds right now, for instance. Next, we have the idea that by going out into space, we could find ourselves running into threats we don't know about and can't handle. At first glance, this one does seem like a good concern, maybe the best. But the thing is, there isn't any reason to think there is anything out there that is a threat we cannot handle. Now I know, two obvious rebuttals spring to mind. First, you are thinking, Isaac, you just said threats we don't know about. If we don't know about them, how can you say we can handle them? Which is a fair point. And you are also probably thinking, hey Isaac, what about aliens? Are you saying a high-tech alien civilization is a threat we can handle? And the answer is no. If they wanted to attack us, they'd mash us up badly. We talked about how insanely huge the scale of a Kardashev 2 civilization was a couple months back, and how they would crush us like a bug even if they only had modern technology. But I also said they could see us anywhere in the galaxy and come get us no matter what we do. They are not a threat we can handle, they just are a threat that is not altered by us going out into space or not. Similarly, if there are hazards in space we do not know about, there is only one way to find out what those are, and if it costs us some explorers, well, that is why we do tend to idolize explorers. They take risks, they roll the dice, and sometimes those come up snake eyes. We are not a species of cowards, and I hope we don't devolve into one. Certainly not one that is terrified into staying home because we are afraid of the unknown. I have to say, I didn't find those reasons too compelling, so I asked the audience for some ideas why we might stay at home, and I got some good ones. As you may or may not know, this topic was selected by a poll over on the channel's Facebook group. It came in first out of about 40 options. The topic surprised me. What if we won't go anywhere? What if we stay on Earth? I thought, what a strange topic to ask me of all people to cover, especially as most of the videos in the last couple months have been about colonizing space. So I threw together a quick video for the Facebook group, asking them to give me their best ideas for why we might never leave Earth, or the solar system at least. And as I said, I got some good ones, at least better than the common ones we just covered. Let us look at those. One of the most common and compelling arguments that was brought up in one variant or another was that we might back off from space because of time lag of communications. This does not hold up in a classically human civilization, but it does work a lot better in the context of a lot of the transhuman or technological singularity style civilizations. While those tend to be immortal by definition, so that time should not be a huge issue, it is worth remembering that some of those could find time delays of even a second incredibly maddening. If your mind has been sped up to process information millions of times faster, in many respects time is basically running millions of times slower for you. Just the 4 or 5 seconds needed for a message to get to the moon and for them to apply would seem like an entire year to you. Waiting for the next book by your favorite author might seem like a few million years, which is even longer than it takes George R.R. Martin to put out a new book. To such a person, the idea of leaving behind the solar system might sound like the worst kind of hell. And one of the audience even flipped around the notion of hive minds on me. Normally, I don't think much about hive minds in regard to space travel. I figure if one altered the dynamics on research and development, it would be to accelerate it. But you cannot run some networked mind at that kind of scale without risking a loss of cohesion, and you would not think of a hive mind as wanting to spawn more separate hive minds. It kind of runs contrary to the basic premise. Which raises a good point about normal civilizations, too. Colonies tend not to be terribly friendly to their homeland for too long. As time goes by and they diverge culturally, they can become an enemy. Now they might not, and it might be a thing only a minority did, but there is still a finite chance that one day an invasion fleet is going to arrive from one of your colonies. It is not even a particularly small chance when you get around to it, but big or small, it is not zero. Right now, the chance of an invasion from Mars is zero. Some might say, why take the risk? And every colony heightens that risk. They are eggs in another basket, and they could hatch nightmares. Some colony might get relaxed about its safeguards to prevent spawning some malevolent superintelligent computer, and next thing you know, a swarm of robot ships comes flying back to Earth. Why spend huge amounts of money colonizing other solar systems when we honestly won't get much out of it, but will get a lot of potential threats? And back here on Earth, we probably won't see many benefits from it either, not for a very long time at least. For instance, we might have finished science, figured it all out, before the first colony contributes its first groundbreaking piece of original new science. You can only conduct serious interstellar trade in information, new science, new art, and so on. Some might argue patience is a virtue, considering the risk, and we should just continue here in our solar system. After all, it wouldn't just have to be Earth, and we have seen the sorts of massive civilizations you can build around just one star. Those ought to spew out more original art and entertainment every second than a single person could watch in 1,000 lifetimes. We might find something more interesting at home, too. As I mentioned back in the compendium and the Dyson Dilemma, all of our assumptions break apart if we start tossing in options like perpetual motion machines being invented, or someone finding out a way to open a portal to alternate universes, where Earth is the same, just never got populated by people. We could also see inside a purely digital civilization that they might not want to go traveling. In such a thing, where one can exist constantly inside virtual reality environments and be immortal in that existence, they might find artificial landscapes made by each other to be vastly more interesting than the universe.
At such a point, the idea of traveling to another solar system
might seem as interesting as leaving an amusement park to travel at great expense for many centuries to visit one random small town in farm country with no internet or phones. We could get pretty lazy in such an existence too. A person born into a utopia, especially the more extreme kinds offered by virtual realities, is going to have motivation problems even learning enough to keep their civilization running, let alone exploring space, which is relatively dull and unpleasant. A lot of post-scarcity civilizations could fall apart just from compounding laziness. Fortunately, such places, by their very nature, would tend to have a lot of immortal people, be they human or some AI, kicking around still to fix stuff. And for that matter, make sure someone doesn't decide to use their super 3D printer that can make anything to make nuclear bombs, or something worse, because they are bored and have no ethics. Of course, such a civilization could turn into a serious police state, even if everybody had everything they could want, just because they need to monitor everything to prevent some lone lunatic from killing everyone. Which brings up our last one, from the audience anyway, that you could end up staying at home because no one is allowed to leave, because humanity is under totalitarian control. That could even be fairly benevolent. Many a tyrannic regime actually has been compared to its neighbors, and tyranny has been the norm, not the exception, of human civilization. It probably is pretty common among aliens, too. You could have one pop up just to protect people from each other. That is the scary thing about a police state, after all, benevolent or terrifying. The one thing such a government would never look fondly on is the idea of some colony too far away for them to monitor and control. Heck, they might even get that passed by popular support when you consider the dangers that might get bred up in those colonies, where they can't control dangerous technologies, and some fool might let dangerously malevolent artificial intelligence off the chain to cannibalize that colony and come home to Earth with an armada planning to do the same. I said in a past episode that the only way to stop colonization, if the technology got practical, would be to shoot down any ship that tried to leave for no greater crime than wanting to leave. I never said people couldn't do that, just that I didn't think anyone would go that far. But in this context, the people doing the shooting are not firing on people who are only guilty of wanting to leave. They are shooting at people they firmly believe are, whether they want to be or not, endangering all of humanity by leaving. To them, it would be the same as being on guard outside a city under quarantine that was infected with a plague, and someone jumped the wall and tried to flee, carrying that plague with them to uninfected cities. They might fire warning shots or try to tackle that person, but if that doesn't work, they probably will shoot them, and I won't say they'd be wrong to do that. The last one to discuss, and the one that always worked for me as a reason to leave our own solar system, is the notion that no matter what else, one day the sun will burn out, and when it dies, so would we, along with everything we accomplished. In the end, the sun will go dark. That's billions of years off, and by using some of the tricks we have discussed before, like star lifting, we could lengthen that even more. Heck, if we could disassemble the sun and just use it to power the Earth via fusion, it would have enough fuel to light our planet not for a few billion more years, but several billions of years. Millions of times longer than we have before the last stars in the universe die off. I hate to say it, but that is time enough. If we have not figured out how to extend our existence indefinitely by then, I don't see that cannibalizing the rest of the galaxy to extend it further would serve much purpose. We would have long since cracked immortality. I would not be surprised if we did by the end of this century, and I would be surprised if we hadn't by the end of the next. Such a civilization would have long since gone a step past zero growth, because you are not even having children to replace people who died of old age, just those who decided to die. And I figure such decisions ought to get less and less frequent as time rolled on, since those still alive would be the ones who especially liked living and were better at helping others decide to do so too. So you could have some billion-year-old civilization here on Earth where most folks are very nearly that old and no one has died in a million years. That would be a weird group,
and I could see them getting collectively exhausted and just saying, enough, we have people here who make Einstein look dumb, and they've been researching ways to beat entropy for a billion years. We don't think we will ever figure it out, and honestly, we don't feel like trying anymore. It seems like our purpose in life is just to keep living. Why go to the effort of sending out ships to gather up more hydrogen to keep us running? Let's just run out the clock. I do not think they would go that route, but I could imagine a handful of people still kicking around as the last fuel ran out and shutting out the lights on all the monstrous libraries and museums they collected down the eons and going to have a drink before the war ended. It doesn't matter how many systems we colonize, someone will eventually have that job, and I could see a lot of civilizations deciding to do their curtain call earlier than they have to so that they can go out with dignity and all their monuments and mementos intact, rather than cannibalizing them all to buy a little more time. If tomorrow the sun went out and the earth started getting colder, I can't see myself burning all my books just to buy myself a couple more days, or robbing my neighbor for their furniture to do the same. So I could see civilizations deciding to stay at home for that reason and others. A touch depressing, that last one, but there are some scenarios that might let us keep going forever, even past the timelines we discussed in the episode about civilizations at the end of time, and I think we will talk about those sometime next year. Taken as a whole, I do not find any of these arguments truly compelling. I honestly don't think many civilizations will choose to stay at home, and in the context of the Fermi Paradox, I just can't believe they all would. So it is not a great solution for the Fermi Paradox in my eyes, though better than many we have looked at. We are going to talk more about alien civilizations next year too, including discussing the scenario of forced contact with them next month. However, next week's episode will close out year 2 for this channel, and the topic then is going to be black swan events and some related concepts like OCP or outside context problems, introduced in the late Ian M. Banks novel Accession. This is the notion of things occurring that no one predicted or could predict, and that just rocked the landscape. Forced contact with aliens is often given as an example of such things. I thought that was an appropriate way to end the year, when it tends to be popular for a lot of folks to make predictions about the future. I considered doing that myself, a list of what technologies I thought we would develop in the next generation maybe, but I think we will go the other way, and remind ourselves how uncertain the future is instead. Again, that is next week, and if you haven't already seen them, I suggest going back and watching the earlier episodes about the Fermi Paradox, or some of the topics we mentioned today, like Matryoshka brains or star lifting. As always, if you enjoyed the episode, make sure to like it and share it with others, and subscribe to the channel for alerts when new episodes come out. Until next time, thanks for watching, and have a great day.